Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Bellingham podcast. We hope this message will be informative, inspirational, and helpful. Donations to support this work are greatly appreciated. Visit www.cslbellingham.org and click on the donate button. Remember to share our podcast. Thank you.
I'm Kalish Leviel, and I'm a practitioner here, and you can tell because I'm wearing one of these. This is the magic stole that came from direct from our Creator so that we could be connected, deeply connected, and thank you. So if you see somebody wearing this, then you know that they're ready to pray for you. And you can go up to any one of us and say that you would like support. And if you're not here and you're not seeing us and you want to still find a way to get our support, there's several ways. So pick anyone. Pick a card, any card. Okay? And know with me right now to get centered, to be present, to be here. Fully here, knowing that the Creator and I and you are one. There is only one. There is only the infinite, all there is. This divine intelligence that comes through me, comes through you, comes through Reverend Colleen, comes through all of us in such perfect and beautiful ways. And I am so grateful. I love this place, and I love this world, and I love each and every one of you. And so it is.
I have a lot of pent-up demand to speak. Let me at them. Anyway, when I walked in this morning, I saw Cheryl. I haven't seen Cheryl in so, Cheryl, where are you now? In so long, man, am I lucky. What a warm-up act, eh? Well, I'm warmed up. I was warmed up before I got here, but now. And Michael and I haven't really got to know each other real well until this morning. Now we're like this, you know. We've been having a love fest, wow. Anyway, I'm so glad you came. Oops. A lot of years ago, on Labor Day weekend, my mother was in labor, and here I am. So I was very excited when Reverend Deb invited me to speak because it's my birthday weekend. What could be better? And I'll tell you, this is a real birthday present for me. And again, thank you, Cheryl and Kyle and Robin, I love you so much. And aren't we blessed? Aren't we blessed? Well, you know, this is the fifth week of our month of love. And it's not even seasonal. You think it was February, but it's not. It's August. And I'm so glad that's the topic because this love, this church was built on love. It really was. And I see some of you who were here right at the very beginning when we were just a few of us together on King Street, and still here. And there's so much love. And, you know, we started this out, Reverend Deborah led us in the launch of love the first Sunday, and then almost Reverend Cindy just blew our doors off with living in the field of love. And after her talk, we were really living in the field of love, if we weren't before. And then Reverend Don came and took us soaring in love. And then Eric, I love Eric. I worked with Eric in Seattle. He's such a kick, he's so great. And he didn't speak about love at all. His topic was a change of scenery. But you know what he did? He gave us the best toolbox. He gave us so many. In fact, I'm going to watch it again on on YouTube and write some of those things down he talked about, because I'd like to teach a class on some of those things, because we can put the love that we're feeling and the love we have and what we've learned from the other talks really deep in our life by using some of the tools that Eric shared. And we do know, though, that he's in love with his car. Yeah. I don't know if you remember when Reverend Abigail was here speaking. She was in love with her car, too, and they were both red. I have a gray car, and I like it. But I'm in love with a lot of things. So this morning I want to talk, my topic is love wins, and love does win. No matter what you're going through, no matter how you're feeling about someone or something, if we can turn even partially towards love, we win. Win takes away so much fear. It casts it out. I think those are two master emotions, fear and love. And when we are in fear, we're not feeling the love and we're not living the life. But if we can turn from that, it's great. So I want to share a little story about my life this morning. I went to college right out of high school, and I went for 2 years, and I had no idea what I wanted to be when I grew up. I had no idea what to major in. I'd taken all my general ed requirements and a few electives, but nothing really, it was like I was going to have to just take something to get by. So I took a gap year, which turned into a gap 6 years. And I ended up graduating from college 10 years after I graduated from high school. And during those 6 years, I got married, I had 2 children, and we bought a new house, moved to the Bay Area, and I felt like our life was just golden. I felt really great about it. And all of a sudden, my high school teacher husband, we both had sore throats, and he didn't get over it. And he lost his voice, and he talked like this. It was called glottal attacks, but nobody knew it then. This was a whole unknown thing. And so the doctor sent him to the speech therapist, the otolaryngologist, and finally to a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist put him on all kinds of pills, all kind of medication. And in those days, they were tough stuff. They were uppers and downers and sideways. And he was just barely got through teaching his last year. And so all of a sudden, we had to move back to the area where we came from, where our parents were. I had an infant and a toddler. I had to move the very day I came home from the hospital with the infant. And I realized that I wasn't going to be Mrs. Cleaver any longer. I can tell some of you are way too young for that reference. But that's probably... come on, there's a rerun of Beaver, the Beaver, somewhere out there in the world. And then I was going to be the primary breadwinner, and I better get my behind back in school. Well, I knew exactly what I needed to major in then, psychology. There's 2 kinds of people in the psychology department, those who need help and those who want to help. Guess which one I was. And I knew it, which is wonderful, because I'd been reared in a really strict fundamentalist home, everything about it. My parents didn't have any friends that didn't attend the same church. And we were in church at least Sunday morning, Sunday evening, the Wednesday night service, and there were always other activities. And so I had lived this very narrow, judgmental, we were right, they were wrong, black and white, in a black and white world. Through all of my husband's illness, I'd gotten over that. I'd really had no faith at all at that point. I was floundering, for sure. I was lost. I was hurting. I was taking care of three people. My husband, who could barely hold down his college job, and an infant and a toddler. I probably weighed about 85 pounds. And I remember going, driving my, I found childcare that was wonderful. The grandparents were all really helpful, but they all worked full time. And I found childcare for an infant with a professor's wife. It was great, that was okay. But I remember I would be driving to college and there was a four-way stop. And I would think, oh, if I pulled out and someone hit me just enough so that I could go to a hospital for 4 or 5 days and rest. You know, it was at that point. But lo and behold, the psychology, being in the psychology department, where there were some professors who were in the needs help category, but I was gifted with some that were in the helper, the heart, the wonderful category. And the therapist, that as we studied the different therapies and modalities that I was touched by so much was Carl Rogers. And Carl Rogers had gone to high, he was in college, he majored in history, and then he went into the seminary. And after a few years, he kind of was having a crisis of faith, just like I had had. And he then ended up getting his PhD in psychology and became a psychologist. And his theory that he put together ultimately was called client-centered therapy. And what the keynote, the building block, the very important thing about that was unconditional regard of the therapist for the client. And quickly, and I don't know if this was in a class discussion or what, but I flipped that into the category of unconditional love. And I had grown up with such conditional love that I thought, is that possible? Would it be possible? Because God was making a list, you know, watching me every moment, just like Santa Claus. You know, and my mother was watching me. She was a helicopter mom before there was such a thing. She's quite the trendsetter, as it were. My kids were free range as a result of all of this. And I just read the other day that an article in Apple News that said children need to be allowed to go wild in nature. And I sent both of my kids a text and said, I was way before my time. I sent them. So, and I still love them without condition, no matter what they do, what they chose, just like the woman in, anybody hear the musical Hair? I'm going to be so dated by the time this is over. No wonder they don't let me up here. The musical Hair, I know the mother says, she's talking about her husband who was killed by being hit by a beer truck. Anyway, but she says to her son, do whatever you want to do, be whoever you want to be, I love you. And I thought, whoa, to have a mother like that. I was a mother like that, and I still am. But this unconditional love, and some of the things that Carl Rogers said was that you accept and value your client. And to me, that means we accept and value each other, that this is a judgment-free place to be, and it really is. I want to share real quick a side, and of course I do. When Eric was here, afterwards he was telling a couple of us, I speak in Centers for Spiritual Living all over the place. I've guest spoken so many, but this center is my very favorite place to come. And this center is infused with love. I don't think you can walk on this holy ground here. We're grounded in love. We love each other. And so I got so much out of choosing that major. But I want to share something else. Because of the kind of turmoil we are in the collective consciousness of the planet and our country, big time. And Cindy shared this with you, kind of Rumi's top hit. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. I'll meet you there. I want, and that is the field of love. It's the field of unconditioned love, pure love. I think the universe is love. One time I was walking when we lived in West Seattle in Lincoln Park, and I was walking along a path by the sound, and all of a sudden, I was in another space, just in a space of awe. And what I got is, it's all love. It's all love. And we all have different ideas of what happens when we die. And I'll go along with whatever you believe, because I don't know. But I think I know, for me, I think we get to decide. I know where I'm going. I'm going to that field of love, just a field of love, the merger of souls, nirvana, if you will. And the way I felt when I have had a few of those, you know, every 10 to 20 years, whether I need it or not, that spontaneity of going into that space where you'd like to live, but you've got to chop wood and carry water kind of thing here in the physical plane. But I know that there is that place, a field beyond wrongdoing and rightdoing, a field beyond haves and have-nots, a field beyond Democrats and Republicans. I took a chance on that one because I think it's really important. And I want to say something. I saw, we're trying to do news light these days so we don't get sucked into the collective consciousness and we stay somewhat at least in the field of love. But I saw a short clip of Donald Trump speaking, and he was talking about John Bolton. And he said, John Bolton has Trump derangement syndrome. And then he said, a lot of people have Trump derangement syndrome these days. And you know what I want to tell you is, a lot of people had Barack Obama derangement syndrome. And a lot of people had Kamala Harris derangement syndrome. And anybody we can name. Because we think differently. There are people in this center, sitting in this room right now, in this field of love, people I love who voted differently than I did. Are you shocked? It's true. It's true. And it's okay, because the key is common ground. And here in this holy place, we find common ground. We accept each other without, as much as we can. We are a judging machine. It keeps you from walking in front of a car. We do judge. We judge, you know, we judge. But we don't have to judge each other just because they think differently than we do. I want to live in that field beyond right doing and wrong doing. I want to love you regardless. And I love whodunit novels. And I particularly like, this would not be socially correct these days, but I really like Travis McGee. Does anyone know Travis McGee? Am I the only one? I have a very eclectic reading library. And I want to share a quote, somewhere I've written it down, about loving unconditionally. I know it's here somewhere. Oh, no. This is why they didn't let me speak before. It's a really good quote. And I found it. Yes. And he's talking about his best friend, Meyer, who's a buddy of his. And he says that. He says, you can be at ease only with those people to whom you can say any damn thing, fool thing that comes into your head, knowing that they will respond in kind. And knowing that any misunderstandings will be thrashed out right now rather than buried deep and given a chance to fester. I love that. You know, when I teach a class, which I don't do much anymore, but when I teach a class, I think it's supposed to stay in the film frame. I want to lean on this. And you can't. It just keeps going. At the end of the class, I'll say, are there any Klingons? You have seen Star... What is it? Star Trek. Because I don't want him to go home with, well, unanswered questions, but more than that, I don't want him going home with resentment or icky feelings and letting it fester. You know, we need to come clean. I think that's why I'm the co-founder. Bob and my husband Bob and I founded this center together. And I think the reason why we've had such a wonderful 41-year run and more to come is because we don't let it fester. It's wonderful being married to a pastoral counselor and a marriage and family therapist. We used to do it wrong, and it was really painful, and now we know how to do it. Most of the time. Once in a while, I'll have somebody tell me, oh, my partner and I, we never have a crossword. God, are you living together? You know, sometimes I feel the love inside myself in the morning, and I just go through everything I'm grateful for, and then Bob says something. You know, if we lived in a cave, if you were a hermit in a well-appointed cave, you would be able to live in the field of love all the time. I mean, who gets mad at a squirrel? Well, a dog. You're mad at a squirrel? I would like you to forgive him. Thank you. But I'm ending, I really am. I'm making the woman holding up numbers in the back really nervous. With a koan. And this was shared with me years ago. I had, when I was doing the transition thing, and I had guest speakers, Don Mahalo, who was a wonderful psychologist, and he spoke one Sunday, and he used this Japanese koan. Out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and right... Oh, I've got the wrong one. That was Rumi. It's because I turned the page about that quote. Anyway... Last night, my barn burned down. Now I can see the moon. And when I heard that, I just went, ah, like you did. Ah. I don't know what that means, but seeing the moon sounds like a good thing. And it's a koan. A koan is a riddle or a paradox that Japanese masters use so the students will get out of their kind of rational mind, their their linear way of thinking. But now I've had about 20 years to think about that koan, and I do think about it. I love it. It's great. Because, and this is what it means to me in my rational, logical mind, is a barn, symbolically, is something you store stuff in. And so you store all your stuff. You know, I'm right and he's wrong. Trump derangement syndrome. You know, whatever it is that's going on, I have to have it this way. I'm neat and clean. They're sloppy. I can't stand being around them. Whatever it is. You know, we have all kinds of stuff. They're kind of chosen thoughts that become frozen thoughts. And you just put them in the barn. You put them in the barn. You put them in the barn. And what could be better than to have that burn down? To have that go away? To have that clog in your thinking cleaned out? So you could be unconditionally caring, unconditionally loving. See everybody. And why that's so important in our teaching is because we believe that everyone is an individualized expression of the one life. God in me, as me, is me. We are all expressions of the one. When Jesus was here, he said, "What I have done, you can do also." And another thing he said, "Heaven is among you right now." And we can decide to choose heaven or hell in our life every day. And we do. And it's all up to us. I choose love because love wins. Let's pray. So coming together, I know that each and everyone here is a lover. Each and everyone is individualized because if two of us were alike, one would be totally unnecessary. We are here to on planet Earth, to give ourselves away to the benefit of all, because that's the purpose. That's what life is about. And we live it lovingly with great gratitude for who we are, what we are, who we are surrounded with, and just the fact that life is good. And so it is.